Right, let's have a look at ISA 700 on audit reports. There was a discussion paper called Promoting Audit Quality, and the Auditing Practices Board looked at the feedback that demanded changes to how the audit report was laid out. The Auditing Practices Board issued a paper called The Auditor's Report, A Time for Change, and the Auditing Practices Board considered the responses in creating its new version of ISA 700. So what were the changes made? Let me give you a summary. First of all, the length of the auditor's report was reduced. Secondly, the standard was written so that we could move towards global convergence by requiring the auditor's opinion on the financial statements to be separate from other opinions required by law and regulation. The two-part opinion is a feature of ISA 700 as issued by the International Board. And lastly, the standard facilitates the inclusion of additional comments in the auditor's report. So, the specific changes that we made. First of all, the basis of opinion paragraph, as it used to be called, is now called the scope of the audit paragraph. And there are three different alternatives to presenting that scope of the audit paragraph. They're as follows. Number one, you can cross-refer to a statement of the scope of an audit section on the APB website. So basically, you don't have to write the words out in your audit report. You simply cross-refer and say the scope of the audit is covered on the APB's website. The second option is to cross-refer to a statement of the scope of the audit elsewhere in the annual report. That option would seem to be a little bit of a waste of time. Why would you do that rather than put it in the report itself? Because that's the third option. Third option is that you describe the scope of the audit actually in the audit report itself. If you did that, there wouldn't be any change to what we've done in the past, really. So the key change, the key improvement here is that the APB are hoping, I suppose, that you will simply have a paragraph that just cross-refers to the APB website. Anybody who hasn't seen that scope of the audit paragraph before can go to the APB website, but most users of the accounts will have seen it year on year. Another important change relates to the description of the auditor's responsibilities. This has been both reduced in length and in part redistributed to the second part of the auditor's report that addresses other reporting matters. This new standard applies to periods ending on or after the 5th of April 2009. So it's currently in play for those with a year end of December 2009. Some other interesting points. First of all, the APB's version of ISA 700 is different from the International Standard on Auditing number 700. The Auditing Practices Board is keeping this under review as it wants to play a part in influencing the development of that international standard going forward. But I must emphasise that our version of ISA 700, that's the UK version, is different to the international version. I want to talk just for a moment about the international version of this standard, because it is slightly different in the terminology to the UK version. The international version of the standard refers to modified and unmodified audit reports, whereas we refer to qualified and unqualified in the UK. An unmodified audit report means a totally unchanged audit report, whereas a modified audit report means a report with no qualifications and no emphasis of matter paragraph. And it's that last point there that where the difference lies. If we have an emphasis of matter paragraph in the UK, we would still call that an unqualified audit report. Brief recap of the different qualifications now we can have in the UK. So I'm back to the UK version of ISA 700 now. And there are two basic qualifications that we can have. And those qualifications can be at two different levels. So first of all, we have the limitation of scope qualification. This is where the auditor is unable to carry out procedures due to lack of evidence. So an example of that might be where accounting records are lost or destroyed. Now, the auditor here isn't saying that there's definitely something wrong with the financial statements. It's just the fact that he doesn't know whether there is anything wrong or not, because the information is missing. So a material qualification for limitation of scope might read something like this: except for any adjustments that might be necessary, the financial statements give a true and fair view. The other level of qualification for a limitation of scope is the pervasive qualification. Now, this is where the missing information is so significant that it renders the whole of the financial statements unreliable. So it's not just one area that there's a problem with, it's several areas. And the sort of language the auditor would use here in this qualification is the auditor would say he was unable to form an opinion. This is known as a disclaimer. So we've covered the limitation of scope qualification at the two different levels. The other qualification is the disagreement qualification. Now here, the auditor is disagreeing with a treatment of an item or perhaps disagreeing with a fact. So for example, the auditor might be disagreeing that a debt should be provided for. The client has said that the debt is good. The auditor thinks it's a bad debt. Here, for a material level of qualification, the auditor would use language such as except for the provision of the bad debt, the financial statements give a true and fair view. So the auditor is just concerned about that one material item. The next level of qualification, though, is the pervasive qualification. And here, like last time, the auditor would be given a pervasive qualification because the whole of the financial statements are unreliable, because perhaps the error is individually so big that it affects the reliability of the underlying financial statements. Or it could be because there are several errors. And here, the auditor would give what's called an adverse opinion and would say the financial statements do not give a true and fair view. So they're the two basic qualifications, limitation of scope and disagreement at the two levels, material and pervasive. We've also got to think about inherent uncertainties. What's an inherent uncertainty? Well, an inherent uncertainty is where there is insufficient information available because the matter under review will only be resolved in the future. What's an example of that then? Well, an example might be that the bank is considering renewing your overdraft facilities and the bank manager hasn't made up their mind yet. So if your facilities were renewed, then the company would be able to continue in its operational existence. And if they weren't, then the company might become insolvent. Because this hasn't been decided yet, the auditor can't say whether the financial statements are true and fair on a going concern basis or not. What does the auditor do about this then? It's not that there's missing information in terms of the information has been lost. It's that there is information that we just won't know until some point in the future. Well, what the auditor does is this. The auditor looks to see whether the uncertainty is properly disclosed in the financial statements. And if it is, if there is full and frank disclosure on that item, then the auditor will include an explanatory paragraph in his audit report detailing the item under review and why it's an inherent uncertainty and the fact that it's been properly disclosed in the accounts. And then after that, the auditor gives a clean audit report. The auditor does not qualify his opinion in that situation. The alternative outcome is that the matter hasn't been properly disclosed. And if that's the case, then the auditor will qualify his audit report and he will qualify it for disagreement. Because what the auditor is doing is disagreeing with the level of disclosure that the organisation has made.